Silver Woman is the legendary Mrs. Crawford, Apostolic Secretary and Congregation of South Charles, out of Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is August 12, 2017, or it's April 21, 2021. We're going to start our first service on this Saturday with a song entitled Yashua Never Fails. Rather yet, the name of this song will be I'd Rather Have Yashua. I'd rather have Yashua than silver or gold. I'd rather be his than have riches untold. I'd rather have Yashua than houses or land. I'd rather be led by his nail-pierced hand than to be the king of the first old man, or be held in senseless slave. I'd rather have Yashua and anything is before today. I'd rather have Yashua than men's applause. I'd rather be faithful to his dear cause. I'd rather have Yashua than worldwide fame. I'd rather be true to his holy name than to be the king of a vast domain. But he had in sin's red slave. I'd rather have Yashua than anything this world affords today. He's fairer than lilies of rarest bloom. He's sweeter than honey from out of the comb. He's all that my hungry the spirit needs. I'd rather have Yashua and lay him lead than to be the king of a vast old man, but be held in sin's dread slave. I'd rather have Yashua than anything is worth the force today. Now, Science Dilemma Power, Track 8 by the B.T. Harlot. We're going to do this track again because we have new light coming every time we go over these subjects. And so, therefore, let's begin with page 1. Actually, it's actually page 3. Mount Zion at the 11th hour. We've had this before, but as I said, we're looking at some new things that we need to know. For Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for Yerushalayim's sake I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as brightness, And the salvation thereof is a lamp that burneth. Now this is part one of this Mount Zion at the 11th hour. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory. Now this is important. Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory. And thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of Yahweh shall name. Thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahweh, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy Yahweh, in the hand of Yahshua his son. Isaiah 62:1-3. Okay, wonder of the divine law, fruition of the exceeding precious promise that the Yahweh will continue speaking unto her until she becomes a great and powerful and resplendent light in all the world, and a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahshua, the Son, the King of Israel, has taken his place upon the throne of the everlasting kingdom of David here on this earth, here in this 12th parabolic hour, during the probationary time, during the judgment time of the living. And this is what we're dealing with now, standing with the Lamb on the Mount Sion, S-I-O-N. For the revelation of the Yahshua Messiah that the Yahweh gave unto him, for to show unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass, and he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John, Revelation 1:1. This affirmation that the prophetic events that the John is privileged to record were to come to pass, not before, but shortly after his receiving of the revelation of them, shows that the prophecies of the revelation were to be fulfilled sometime during the New Testament period. And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Sion, and with him 144,000, having his Father's name written in their foreheads. And I heard a voice from the heaven as the voice of many waters, and as the voice of a great thunder, and I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps, and they sung as it were a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders, and no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. Revelation 14:1-3. Prior unto this prophetic event, the standing of the 144,000 upon the Mount Sion, a door was opened into heaven. And the first voice which I heard, says John, was as it were of a trumpet talking with me, which said, come up hither, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. And immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne was set in the heaven, and one sat on the throne. And he that sat, was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone, and there was a rainbow round about the throne, and the sight like unto an emerald, and round about the throne were 24 seats. And upon the seats I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in the white raiment, and they had on their heads crowns of gold. And before the throne there was a sea of the glass like unto the crystal, and in the midst of the throne, and round about the throne, were four beasts full of the eyes before and behind. Revelation 4:1-4, and verse 6. Now this Revelation 4, John sees the first phase of the judgment as it is opened up, and the time that it was opened up, 1844. It was called the judgment of the dead. So he saw that throne sit in the heaven there in Revelation 4. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of the odors, which are the prayers of the saints. And I beheld and I heard the voice of many angels round about the throne, and the beast and the elders, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. Revelation 5, 8, 11, and 12. Now this Revelation 5 is the judgment of the living. So we have just read to you the two phases of the judgment that opened in 1844. Revelation 4, 1 to 4 and 6 represents the judgment of the dead. And the books were opened. And the seventh book was opened in 2002. So we had the opening up of the books one book at a time as the judgment of the dead proceeded. And that judgment of the dead went on for 158 years from 1844 to 2002, ending and culminating with the closing of the Gospel Ministry for the Adventist Church at Gilead Center in 2002. And the closing of the sixth seal and the judgment for the dead period. And closing out the 11th parabolic hour. Okay, and opening up of the 12th parabolic hour, starting the judgment of the living. And opening up of the book of the seventh seal, Revelation 8. For the Lamb standeth first before the throne in the heaven, stands later with the 144,000 on the Mount Sion upon the earth. Though the elders and the beasts round about the throne remain in the heaven, so correctly to understand this prophetic event in its entirety, we must carefully differentiate the part which takes place in the heaven from the part which takes place on the earth. The part that takes place in the heaven is for the judgment of the dead. There's no reason for it to come down to earth, since the judgment is taking place in the throne room in the heavenly sanctuary. For the seven lamps, Revelation 4, 5, being part of the sanctuary fixtures, gives conclusive evidence that the heavenly throne scene occurs in the sanctuary, whereas the subsequent sign, S-I-O-N, scene, takes place on the Mount Sion, the king's earthly palace ground, not upon the Mount Moriah, the sanctuary ground. Now, do you get that? Where it would necessarily have to take place were to denote that the events occur in the sanctuary. These things, therefore, are of the two different events in two different locations, the sitting of the throne in heaven, and the standing of the Redeemer of the Lamb on the earth, while the activities embracing the throne scene are still in progress. Now get that. When the judgment of the dead came to a close in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, we opened up the judgment of the living and the 12th parabolic hour with Yahshua invisibly taking his place, standing with his people at Kermit, Texas, the house of David, and house of David with the name of Mount Zion. And the house of David has one commission. The first part of the commission is to bring forth 144,000. So Yahshua is seen standing with the Lamb. As the Lamb. He's seen standing as a Lamb on the Mount Zion, not in the sanctuary, where the judgment is going on. So what happened at Kermit, Texas, was Yahshua stepped out of the sanctuary and came to this earth. Invisibly, but he came. We have that prophecy in Ezekiel 1, verse 26. We have that prophecy. Moreover, the statement, I will show thee things which must be hereafter, places the events in the antitypical apostolic period. It says, in the Christian period, in the antitypical apostolic Nazarene, the followers of the Yahshua. And the statement stood as a lamb as it had been slain, bleeding in the sinner's behalf, places them in the probationary time. Well, I want to say something here. I need to make a little correction here. If Yahshua is standing upon the Mount Zion, and he's but not in the sanctuary, but he's on the Mount Sinai, the kingly palace ground. And yet it says right here, he stood as a lamb, as it had been slain, bleeding in the sinner's behalf, places them in the probationary time. Well, if he stood as a lamb, where did he stand as a lamb at? In the midst of the throne, Revelation chapter 5. Talks about the Lamb that took the book out of the hand of him that sit upon the throne in the most holy place, his Father's hand. And he says he is only worthy to open up the book of the seven seals. And he appeared as a lamb of the bleeding in the sinner's behalf. And he only blood is taken into the sanctuary, and especially Yahshua's blood. He sheds his blood in the sanctuary on the sinner's behalf. So, I can't see him standing on Mount Zion. I can't see him doing that. Not carrying on a sanctuary work at the same time. Because in Revelation 3, I believe, it says that, he says, he that overcometh, will I grant to sit with me in my throne, as I also overcame and sit down with my Father in his throne. So when he comes back, his throne is in the sanctuary. And he says those who overcome are going to sit down here in the throne, including the 144,000. All the overcomers, where judgment is going on. Alright. Then from a comparison of the Daniel 7, 9, and 10, 13, with Revelation 4, 2, and 5, 1, 11, already quoted, the fact is clear that both visions are of the same event. The judgment. See, it says that both visions are the same event. One where he is seen, where the judgment is seen when John saw it first open in heaven, and then he saw him standing as a lamb on Mount Sinai, which is here on earth, so he had to come to earth to do that. And he stood as a lamb bleeding for sinners. So it says this is about the same event, the judgment. The one reveals it's occurring in the period of the nondescript beast. So, the second stage, after its horn, which had the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things, had blasphemed after the reign of ecclesiastical Rome. Alright, the last man that blasphemed heaven and Yahweh was Obama, the President of the United States, from 2009 to 2017. And before the beast was slain and his body given to the burning flame, Daniel 7:11, before Rome's destruction, and the other vision reveals it taking place sometime in the Christian period and within the probationary time. So, we had the nondescript beast, the one revealed that occurred in the period of the nondescript beast, the second stage. So the nondescript beast reached clear up to our time. The nondescript beast took on this description in 538 A.D. And he came to his end in 1798 A.D. But the thing is, it says, the key word is blaspheming here. Okay, it says, the one reveals it occurring in the period of the nondescript beast, second stage, after its horn, which had the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things, had blasphemed after the reign of ecclesiastical Rome. It says he blasphemed after the reign of ecclesiastical Rome. Well, Obama, ecclesiastical Rome is over, and Obama, he blasphemed Yahweh of heaven. Okay. And before the beast was slain, and his body given to the burning flame. So this beast was slain, and his body given to the burning flame. How do you slay a beast? Well, the beast represents the Catholic system, the New World Order. So and Babylon, Mystery Babylon. That whole system is going to be, according to Revelation 18, is going to be destroyed. Was slain and his body given to the burning flame, Daniel 7:11. Before Rome's destruction and the other vision reveals it's taking place sometime in the Christian period and within the probationary time. Okay. Daniel saw thrones cast down, or placed around, set up, to start the judgment scene. And the Ancient of the Days, Yahweh the Father, the judge said, showing that was on the Day of Atonement, when the Ancient of the Days said, showing that neither he nor the thrones were there beforehand, evidently on the rest of the thrones, seats, sat the 24 elders. And finally he saw the Son of Man, Yahshua, the Advocate, brought before the Ancient of Days. Accordingly, both Daniel and John saw the judgment sit and the books opened. And as John saw the 144,000 stand on the Mount Sinai with the Lamb, after judgment sit and before it was closed, the event consequently comes neither before nor after judgment, but during it. And now remember that John's vision of the Lamb standing on the Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1, reveals Yahshua as a Savior, whereas his vision of the Lion of the tribe of Judah standing before the judgment reveals him as a king. So, he's carrying on a dual work here. He's a king and a Lamb, an advocate, bleeding for sinners. Correlated, they show that while he is then the Savior, he is at the same time the King of Kings. It now being clear as to when the 144,000 emerged, and increased interest follows as to who they are, seeing that they are the followers of the Lamb, Christians, also sons of Jacob. They are therefore Israelites indeed, not Gentiles. Israelites indeed, not Gentiles. Whosoever hath been converted unto Christianity, accepting Yahshua as his personal Savior, has had an experience that has completely overthrown the revolutionized his former plans and hopes. For his entire way of the life, he has renounced the world and all its pleasures of sin for a season, Hebrews 11:25, and has become a new creature in the Yahshua, born again, heir of the kingdom according to the promise. This is what Yahshua meant when he declared unto Nicodemus, he must be born again. And Paul, having this experience in mind, said, if ye be the Yahshua's, then are ye Abraham's seed and heirs according unto the promise, Galatians 3:29. Regardless, therefore, whether one be Jew or Gentile, he can have no part in the general yasya save through the second birth, by which he becomes one of the seed of Abraham. But this spiritual transformation, nevertheless, does not fix anyone's racial identity and tribal lineage. It cannot, in other words, make one Judahite if he is not descendant of the Judah, or make him an Ephraimite if he is not the descendant of the Ephraim. Consequently, the 144,000 being of the sons of Jacob cannot be of the Gentile nation. They, therefore, first of all, are lineal descendants of Jacob, though not necessarily of the present identifiable Jewish stock. For the 10 tribes, the kingdom of the Israel, were carried away, scattered throughout the cities of the Medes. 2 Kings 17:6. And so completely submerged in the sea of the life of the surrounding nations and assimilated that they were utterly lost sight of racially unto the human reckoning. Similarly, as the 2 tribes of the kingdom of Judah were carried away into the Babylon, with only a few returned unto Jerusalem after the 70 years of their captivity was accomplished, a multitude also of them lost their identity. Then too, the early apostolic congregation was made up of the Jews only. For the apostles, 120 in the upper room, Acts 1:15, and the 3,000 who were converted on the day of the Pentecost, Acts 2:41, were all Jews, as were indeed virtually all those who were added daily for the first 3.5 years after the crucifixion, Daniel 9:26-27, Acts 2:47. And even after this period was over and the apostles were commissioned to take the gospel unto the Gentiles, Acts 13:46, many more Jews became believers and joined the apostolics, and subsequently as believers, in other words, they became converted rather than as Jews were scattered among the nations. Truly, therefore, in each instance, most of the sons of Jacob lost their racial distinctiveness. As the Yahweh, however, has ever kept the genealogies of all nations, especially the sons of Jacob, he will, as he has promised, make mention of the Rahab and Babylon unto them that know me, the whole Philistia and Tyre with Ethiopia, this man was born there, and of Zion it shall be said this, and that man was born in her. And the highest himself shall establish her. Yahweh shall count when he riseth up the people, that this man was born there of Selah. Psalms 87:4-6. Thus, just as obvious as strange is the fact that no one today but the recognized Jew can vouch for his ancestry, with the result that the 144,000 can be gathered from almost every nation, kindred, tongue, and people, and yet be of the sons of Jacob. And it shall come to pass in that day, says the word of the prophecy in this connection, that the Yahweh shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria, and from Egypt, and from Patros, and from Cush, and from Elam, from Shinar, and from Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Yahweh shall beat off from the channel of the river unto the stream of Egypt, and ye shall be gathered one by one, O ye children of Israel. Isaiah 11:11, 12, 27:12. Since therefore history, logic, and scripture combine their evidence to prove unconditionally that Yahweh has preserved the genealogy of the chosen branch of the human race forward from Adam unto Noah, Matthew 1:1-17, and backward from Yahshua unto Adam, Luke 3:23-38, he must then for a consistent reason also have preserved the identity of the elect today. And this we see is precisely what he has done in his designating the lineage of the 144,000 as of all the tribes of the children of the Israel, Revelation 7:4. And though we know not what we are and cannot ever of ourselves tell, the one who knows all about us, even unto the last hair of each head, knows our precise ancestry. Although those of us who are to be gathered from the seed of Jacob are, says the prophet, as the sand of the sea, whereas, comparatively speaking, the identifiable Jewish race of the day is but a handful unto the nation, and therefore cannot today be the ones unto whom apply the terms Israel, Ephraim, and Joseph. Going back for a moment for the historical approach into our subject, we recall that after Solomon's death, the Israelite nation, the 12 tribes, were divided into the two separate kingdoms, 1 Kings 11:11-12, 12:19-27. The 10-tribe kingdom occupying the northern portion of the Promised Land was called Israel. Also Ephraim, and occasionally the house of Joseph, Israel, because the majority of the tribes, Ephraim, Isaiah 11:13, because his kings came from Ephraim, and Joseph, Ezekiel 37:16, because he was the father of Ephraim. But the two-tribe kingdom occupying the southern portion was called Judah, because his kings were the tribe of Judah, and therefore its descendants are called Jews. The term Israel accordingly often applies only unto the 10 tribes. So when henceforth in these pages the reader comes upon the terms Judah, Israel, Ephraim, and Joseph, he will understand precisely who they are designating. And will thus, as we proceed, better understand Yahweh's plan for the ingathering of the 12 tribes of Israel and for the reuniting them in the one great kingdom. The kingdom of heaven, said the Yahshua, is like unto a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs, and becometh a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Matthew 13:31-32. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered, and it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there it shall be said unto them, ye are the sons of the living Yahweh. Hosea 1:10. Hearing Yahshua's teaching, then rejecting them and crucifying him, the Jewish nation brought upon their heads the doom which Yahweh pronounced upon them when through his prophet he declared, you are not my people and I will not be your Elohim. Though at the same time in his great mercy he let the promise be written in the place where it was said unto them, ancient Israel, you are not my people, there it shall be said unto them, ancient Israel, ye are the sons of the living Elohim. See Romans 9:24-26. So happily, the same Israel and Judah, who were set aside and scattered, will in that day, our time, be reaccepted and gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall conquer all the land. Hosea 1:11. Having abode many days without a king, their lot from the days of their captivity in Babylon, even unto this very day, For the children of Israel shall after some time in the future, says the scripture, return and seek Yeshua their Savior and David their king, and shall fear the Yahweh and his goodness in the last latter days. Hosea 3, 4, and 5. And as of David, the king of the ancient Israel, had been dead for many years when this prophecy was made, and as it has never been fulfilled, he was a type of the David to come. Accordingly, it is those who fear the Yahweh, the type of the David to come. Accordingly, it is those who fear the Yeshua and his goodness. The apostolic Israelites in the latter days. Let's do that again. Fear the Yeshua and his goodness, parentheses, the antitypical apostolic Israelites, being, in the form of the 12 tribes having been gathered and put back together into one great kingdom here in the Strathclyde Valley Tower in the latter days, our time, who shall appoint one head or king, the antitypical David. For a complete study in Hosea 1 2, read our chat number 4, the latest news from Mother. From the clear-cut facts in the preceding paragraph, we see that the children of the Israel dispersed without a king these many days are returned not as Jews but as antitypical apostolic Nazarene believers. The consolidation of the two ancient kingdoms, Judah and Israel, is set forth in the symbolism of the two joined sticks. The Son of Man, says the Yahweh, take thee one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel his companion, and take another stick and write upon it for Joseph the stick of Ephraim and for all the house of Israel his companion, and join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand. Whose hand? The Son of Man. He's talking to Ezekiel here. Well, Ezekiel translates into the Son of Man being antitypical David. And when the children of thy people shall speak unto thee, saying, wilt thou not show us what thou meanest by these? Say unto them, thus saith the Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel his fellows, and will put them with him, even with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they shall be one in mine hand. And the sticks whereon thou writest shall be in thine hand before their eyes. And say unto them, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen, where they be gone, and will gather them on every side, and bring them into their own land. And I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be king unto them all, and they shall be no more two nations. Neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all. Neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgression, but I will save them out of all their dwelling places wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them, so shall they be my people, and I will be their Elohim. And David, my servant, shall be king over them, and they all shall have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them. They shall dwell in the land that I have given unto Jacob, my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt. They shall dwell therein, even they and their children, and their children's children forever. And my servant David shall be their prince forever. Ezekiel 37, 16 to 25. this illustrated process scarcely needs to be interpreted. It is virtually self-explanatory, showing that the two ancient kingdoms, Judah and Israel, will yet be gathered from among the heathen, among whom they have long been scattered, and that they will become again one great nation, a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Daniel 2:44. Moreover, saith Yahweh, I will make a covenant of the peace with them, which shall be an everlasting covenant with them, and I will place them and multiply them, and will set my sanctuary in the midst of them forevermore. My tabernacle also shall be with them, yea, I will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And the heathen shall know that I, Yahweh, do sanctify Israel, and my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore. Ezekiel 37:26-28. Since Yahweh said that he will multiply them when they again become a kingdom, and that the heathen shall know that I, Yahweh, do sanctify Israel, and since he can never multiply nor sanctify after the close of probation, that the two ancient kingdoms must necessarily then be restored and consolidated during the probationary time and the times of the restitution of all things. I added that. For the 144,000 being of the first fruits, as the first fruits, there must therefore be also a second fruit. For where there is first, there must also be a second. And as the first fruits are the servants of Yahweh, they must subsequently be sent unto all nations to gather the second fruit. Isaiah 6:19-20. For the great multitude, Revelation 7:9, that the John saw after viewing the scene of the 144,000. For a detailed study of this subject, the 144,000 and the great multitude, see our tract number 1, the pre-11th hour extra, the Shepherd Rod Volume 1. The fact that in their mouth is found no gall, Revelation 14:5. Plainly goes to show that they are to proclaim nothing but pure gospel truth, and make their words as authoritative and as mandatory as the written words of the prophets and other apostles. Indeed, these first fruits are invested with even greater power and authority. In that day shall the Yahweh defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as the David, and the house of David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahweh before them, Zechariah 12:8. Also in that day, further says Zechariah, there shall be a fountain open unto the house of David, and unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. Zechariah 13:1. When this fountain for sin and for uncleanness is finally opened unto the house of David, the crowning evidence will be seen that the consolidation of the two kingdoms is an accomplished fact, and that the time has come for the proclamation of the gospel in all of the world. So the evidence they talked about for years and years, when this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached unto all nations for witness unto all nations, then shall the end come. And they said, well, we've been preaching the gospel for many, many years, and we've only covered this many nations, but we've practically, our message has been heard, the three angels all over the world, so we're getting close. But you know, in Zechariah, Matthew 24:14, I believe. We'll try to get to it here. It says, and this good news of the kingdom, I'm reading from the Yahweh Bible, and this good news of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Well, they don't even know what the gospel is. Nobody does. except us, and it said, so in spirit of gospel, we can say, when the proclamation of the good news of the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant is preached in all the world, and it shall come to pass in that day, saith the Yeshua the host, that I will cut off the names of the idols out of the land, they shall no more be remembered, and also I will cause the prophets and the unclean spirit to pass out of the land. Zechariah 13:2. That is, at the time that this good news proclaiming kingdom is set up, it will be a congregation without doubt, free from all idolaters and false teachers, and it shall be fed by one shepherd, even my servant David. He shall feed them. He shall be their shepherd, and all the yard will be their Elohim, and my servant David a prince among them. Ezekiel 34:23-24. When the Yahshua thus takes the reins in his own hands, Testimonies Ministry, page 300, and that took place in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, at Gilead Center, starting at the Passover. He took the reins in his own hands. Well, actually, he took the reins in his own hands the day that he told me there's going to be a changing of the guard, and I told it to Brother Johnson early in 2002. And he took it seriously, and he couldn't sleep comfortably after that. That's when Yahshua took the reins in his own hand. But actually, I could back up to the time when he told me to clean up the church with Matthew 18, starting with that woman that's been causing trouble for 13 years. That was January 27, 2001. And that's actually when Yahshua took the reins in his own hand. It shall come to pass, as says Isaiah, that the mountain of Yahshua's house shall be established in the top of the mountain, and shall be exalted above the hill, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, come ye and let us go up unto the mountain of the Yahweh, unto the house of the Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, we will walk in his paths. For out of the Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of Yahshua from Yahushua. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords in the plowshare, and their spears in the pruning hoofs. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore, Isaiah 2:2-4. So we got a few years yet to go, it looks like, here, because we're going to have this world war, and it's shaping up right now. And if that takes place, you'll have all the nations then coming to Yahweh's holy mountain. You'll have the gathering of the first fruits, house of David, the 144,000, and then gathering the second fruits, spirit-filled people that will come to the holy mountain. And it says, when that happens, you'll learn war no more. So with the ushering in of this everlasting kingdom and the consequent restitution of all things, there shall be on the one hand a great awakening among the nations, scrapping vast stores of war implements which they have for years been laying up. They shall seek to go up and become subjects of the kingdom and to join the armies of the Yahweh, allowing him to fight for them, and while on the other hand there shall be feverish war preparations among those who refuse to awaken, turning all into a super armament program. They turn even their farm implements into weapons of war against the kingdom of Yahshua. His congregation, Joel 3:19-12, Zechariah 12:3. Therefore thy gates shall be open continually, they shall not be shut day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the forces of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. For the sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all they that despise thee shall bow themselves down to the soles of thy feet. And they shall call thee the city of Yahweh, the Zion, the Holy One of Israel. Isaiah 60:11-14. For further study on this phase of the subject, see the Shrimad Bhagavatam, page 173-181, explaining Maka 4, and as a typical example of how the battle is the Asura, read 2 Chronicles 20, 15, 19, 24, 30. That being far, very far from such high and holy estate, the congregation, the house of Israel, must, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, must be purified. No Christian of any faith can honestly deny the Church's need of the purification, and as the Yahweh never does anything without forewarning his congregation, he is now sending unto her the message of the purification, in order to give her a foretaste of the future glory, so that as the heavens clear and tall for the Reformation continues shining forth among his people, they may have a keen relish for its truth and may give themselves wholeheartedly unto the work of reform. Right now, while he is clearly laying before them his plan for the setting up of his kingdom, the consequent result to the sinners, those who give implicit heed unto the call shall have an irresistible desire to come fully into line and to have the Yahshua separate them from sin and sinners. They alone shall receive the seal of Yahweh, and as the first fruits of the kingdom, 144,000 strong, stand with the Lamb on the Mount Zion. Such a taste of the holiness will today, just as in the past, cause the dragon to be wroth with the woman, also now to make war with her remnant, Revelation 12:17, a conflict which is further described in the words. You know, we think in terms of this woman as being a remnant. You know, this woman is the whole house of Israel, but she has a remnant. Now, if the whole house of Israel is represented by the woman, then where is the remnant? That's the second fruits. I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth at the time of the sealing of 144,000, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living Elohim. And he cried with a loud voice unto the four angels, angels unto whom it is given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of Elohim in their foreheads, Revelation 7:1-3. Here are brought to view two hurting about to take place, one by the winds, the other by the angel, and two commands unto the angel, one that they restrain the winds, that the winds blow not on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree, Revelation 7:1. The other, that the angels restrain themselves from hurting the earth, sea, and the trees, till the servants of Yahweh are sealed, Revelation 7:2-3. Since therefore, as soon as the servants of the Yahweh are sealed, both the winds and the angels will begin to hurt. For the question arises as to what the work of the winds and the work of the angels represent. Political strife or something else? Question mark. As the nations have always been at war, this twofold work of the hurting could not represent political strife. And as the Yahshua said, that at the time of the end, nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. Matthew 24:7. It is clear that the hurting by the winds also, the hurting by the angels, both of which are kept back until the 144,000 are sealed, must be figurative of the holding back of the time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, Daniel 12:1. Accordingly, Yahweh's restraint of the four winds is holding back the image of the beast's activity, Revelation 13:15-17, against the saints, while his restraining of the four angels that they hurt not is holding back the executing of his vengeance, Isaiah 63:1-4. Jeremiah 51:18. Upon the sinners who trouble their congregation until after the sealing of the 144,000 is completed, then couple these two hurtings bring the time of trouble such as never was. So, it says Revelation 7:1-3. Therefore the word reveals a twofold conflict. That's Revelation 7:1-3, therefore, reveals a twofold conflict. Wicked men against Yahweh, the blowing of the winds, and Yahweh against them. For the angels hurting them, the third, the blowing of the winds, and the hurting of the angels after the service of Yahweh the seal, will bring the time of the trouble. That everyone that shall be found written in the book shall be delivered. Daniel 12:1. From these facts we see that this time of trouble is held back in order to safeguard the seed of the 144,000 servants, lest they, the very elect, be brought down to worship the image of the beast or be killed for refusing. Since in the Revelation all the books of the Bible meet and end, the Acts of the Apostles, page 585, the sealing of the servants of Yahweh, Revelation 7, must necessarily be found also in the prophecies. In the Ezekiel chapter 9 is envisioned the marking of those who sign Christ. For all the abominations that be done the mystery of in the Judah and in Israel, and the slaughter of those who do not thus sigh and cry, and the fact that Elohim has at no time taken the sinners from among the righteous in the Judah and in Israel, shows that this prophecy of the purification by the slaughter has never been fulfilled. So therefore, as the marking is the same as the sealing, the angels slain is the same as the angels hurting. Now this hurting and sealing which John saw, and the slaughter and marking which Ezekiel saw, are again identified as the one and the same. This sealing of the servants of Yahweh is the same that was shown to Ezekiel in the vision. Testimony of the Ministry, page 445. And Testimonies, Volume 5, page 211, and Volume 3, page 267. Nothing but the blood of Yahshua. What can wash away my sin? Nothing but the blood of Yahshua. What can make me whole again? Nothing but the blood of Yahshua. Oh, precious is the flow that makes me white as snow. No other fount I know. Nothing but the blood of Yahshua. Pardon this I see, nothing but the blood of Yahshua. For my cleansing this my plea, nothing but the blood of Yahshua. Oh, precious is the flow that makes me white as snow. No other fount I know, nothing but the blood of Yahshua. Nothing can for sin atone, nothing but the blood of Yahshua. Not of good that I have done, nothing but the blood of Yahshua. No, precious is the flow that makes me white as snow. No, as if I know, nothing but the blood of Yahshua. This is all my hope and peace. Nothing nothing but the blood of Yahshua. This is all my righteousness, nothing but the blood of Yahshua. Oh, precious is the flow that makes me white as snow. Oh, no other path I know, nothing but the blood of Yahshua.